Connect Yourself with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 7th episode of Robots. In this episode, we dive into the human body with the latest research from Carnegie Mellon University on microrobots propelled by live bacteria. Assistant Professor Metin Sitti tells us about his creation that in the future may be injected directly into a patient and remotely driven to target diseases.
We then go to the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, where gastroenterologist Mark Shatner gives us his expert view on how Metin Sitti's robot could be useful at helping his endoscopes and microcapsules treat and diagnose patients. And now let's go to Christine for the latest news on robotics.
Thanks, Sabine. In a world premiere, a group of researchers from the University of Reading have built a robot controller by interfacing 300,000 lab-grown rat nerve cells with 60 electrodes. The result is a robot capable of avoiding obstacles based on commands it receives from a biological neural network through wireless connection. The experiment was conducted as part of research to understand brain disorders like Alzheimer or Parkinson, and focused in particular on how memories manifest themselves in the brain and how a brain stores specific pieces of data. You may have heard of the DARPA challenges, in which the U.S. Department of Defense awarded prizes for the best autonomous cars navigating in desert or urban environments. Now the UK's Ministry of Defence has held its own robotic competitions, the UK Grand Challenge, focused on the best way to detect military threats in an urban environment. Unlike the DARPA challenges, entries were not restricted to autonomous cars. The winning team used a swarm of flying robots in combination with a single tank-like robot on the ground to explore a mock village while looking out for hidden snipers, armed enemies in the open, and roadside bombs. The European Space Agency, ESA, has unveiled the latest prototypes for a robotic rover that is due to land on Mars in 2015. The Mars robot's most important innovations concern its maneuverability. The rover has 6 wheels, which can be rotated individually, allowing the robot to turn on the spot and move sideways like a crab. In addition, the robot has a wheel-walking capability, which allows it to anchor itself with 5 of its wheels and inch each wheel forward 1 at a time to crawl over an obstacle. The novel hardware is complemented with a unique intelligent navigation system, which enables the robot to take some decisions autonomously, avoiding the 20-minute delay for an instruction sent from Earth and to arrive at Mars. For pictures, links, videos, and discussions on the first rat-brained robot, the flying and ground-based robot teams in the UK's Grand Challenge, as well as the ESA's new Mars rover, have a look at our forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks a lot for the news, Christine. A few weeks ago, I had a chance to share a drink with a wonderful view of the Alps with Professor Metin Sitti and discuss some of the exciting microrobots that have been swimming, crawling, or climbing out of his lab. Based at the Nanorobotics Lab at Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania, Sitti focuses his work on innovative, bio-inspired robotic solutions that take advantage of the physics that exist only at the micro or nano scale, such as gecko-like dry adhesives or robots that can run on water. Let's hear what Sitti has to say about one of his projects, a bacteria-propelled micro-swimming robot.
Hi, Metin Sitti, and welcome to the Robots Podcast. Can you please introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Hi, I'm Metin Sitti. I'm an associate professor at Carnegie Mellon University, and I'm directing the robotics laboratory here.
Can you briefly summarize your areas of interest in the field of robotics?
My interests are in designing, building, and controlling very small-scale robots down to micron scale, in the sense of mobile robotics especially.
Metin, you are one of the pioneers of microrobotics and are leading the field by using bioinspiration as a starting point for your designs. For example, you were the first to manufacture artificial gecko hairs to have your robots climb up walls or across ceilings. One of your most recent projects takes this link of biology to a new level by effectively integrating robotic devices with actual biological organisms. Can you tell us a bit more about this particular project?
Yes. So as you mentioned, we have done a lot of research on biological inspiration. And in that regard, we also studied bacteria-inspired swimming robots at the micron scale. And we looked at the flagellar propulsion of these micron-scale organisms. And after studying them in detail, we found that it's very challenging to build, indeed, a synthetic micron-scale robot. And rather than doing that, we changed our approach, and then we started to basically build a micron-scale robot which is propelled by the attached bacteria. So in that regard, we are really using biological organism itself rather than just inspiration in our new micron-scale mobile swimming robots.
So what would you say are the applications of such a robot?
The potential applications could be in the future for biomedical area. For example, these tiny devices with bacterial propulsion could be installed inside the body with many of them and could have a drug on their body and on demand by targeting these drugs with these bacteria to a specific location with a possible diseased area. And we could basically get the drug delivered at those locations. And we could also try some diagnostic applications with biosensors at that scale. So in that regard, I think we envision in the liquid areas where we don't have high-speed flow, like the urinary tract, spinal cord liquid, and brain lobes, you could have these tiny devices with bacterial propulsion for biomedical applications.
Mm-hmm. So this seems like a whole new field, actually. What kind of challenges do you find, apart from what you find usually with robotics, when you're dealing with actual living beings, actual bacteria? I mean, is it hard to keep them alive? Do they like being attached to a robot? Do they even move when you want them to, or how does that work?
That's a very good question. I think it's definitely a new paradigm of using biological microorganisms for robotic actuation. In that regard, as you mentioned, first of all, you need to keep these organisms alive, and they always like to move, and they also have their own objectives. So in that regard, first of all, you need to attach them to the synthetic surfaces like the devices we are building in a controlled way. And adhesion of these structures or organisms are really challenging, and we have studied for a few years to get them really attached very well. And besides that, you need to keep them alive, as you mentioned. That means the physiological condition of the liquid environment is important. But most of these bacteria can survive in a wide range of conditions in a very robust way. So in that regard, we are okay. And other thing is, I think the biggest challenge, I could say, besides these practical technological challenges, is controlling these devices, because these organisms are always stochastic and they have their own sensing and reaction. So how can you really control those behavior and also have a stochastic system that could do what you like? Those are all interesting problems that we are encountering and trying to solve currently.
Mm-hmm. Are these bacteria dangerous in any way if we inject them into a human's urinary tract or somewhere? Do they pose problems if they stay, if they multiply?
That's a good point. So the reason why we chose bacteria in any case is because of these kind of reasons. Because bacteria can be engineered genetically so well currently that they can be basically non-pathogenic. So a genetic engineer can basically change the genes of the bacteria we want to attach to the robot, and that means they would be basically not giving any possible disease. And also multiplication issues, the idea is if they don't detach from the device itself, they will be all fine in the sense that they will not multiply, because our aim is basically put them in a liquid environment that they wouldn't like to multiply, because that is mostly determined by liquid environment. So our concept is to not make them able to basically multiply, and plus make them genetically engineered so that they will be never causing any possible disease. And also, of course, they will be also robust enough to, let's say, in urinary tract, you have acidic environment. So there are bacteria which can survive in the urinary system. That's why we will choose the right bacteria which can survive in the given environmental condition.
Mm-hmm. So what happens to these robots after they've been used, the bacteria and also the robotic part of it?
That's a good question. I think one possibility is making them out of biodegradable materials and basically just leaving them there, and the body will dispose them in a natural way. And the next option is, of course, since they could be steered, you could also steer them out from the body by using, again, urinary tract or possible other, let's say, systems easily by controlling their motion.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Have you looked at how people might react if you tell them you're injecting not only bacteria, but robots into their skin or into their blood? It's scary in two ways almost. It's like we're injecting bacteria, and at the same time we're injecting robots into your system. Do you know how people would react to that?
That definitely it will be challenging. Of course, first of all, we will never target for blood, at least in the near future. But as you say, definitely psychologically for anybody, having an organism getting into your body and even a device, it's always a psychological challenge. But when you look at the current technology and the ways that we are treated and even the drugs delivered, I think if you can show people that by these targeted drug delivery or diagnosis devices, they will have much less invasive operations and diagnosis methods. That will make their life much easier rather than having a surgical device inside their body. If you can show them and even show the technology that we can really minimally invasively conduct these operations, I think that will give a lot of opportunity for people to try and accepting these new technologies easier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the major goal, basically to make our life easier and less painful.
Okay. So what kind of time frame do you see for these robots? Do you see them being deployed anytime soon, or is there a lot of work left to be done?
The bacteria-attached robots definitely will take some time to get them into real applications. Right now, we are really at the very basic level research to basically attach them and to control them. I could say at least tens of years to get them into real applications in biomedical area. But we are definitely showing already moving devices with some on-off control. That's very promising. But to come to the real application level, we need to really study all material effects, as you mentioned, possible side effects and environmental control and all those issues in a very detailed way.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, actually. So where are you right now? What are your latest results with these robots?
Currently, we attached bacteria onto specific geometries of robot bodies, like spherical bodies or cylindrical bodies. And then we can show how the bacteria can propel these devices in a liquid medium in a stochastic way. And then we could chemically give an achemical which will stop the structure of the robot because the bacteria are stopped. And then you can also give another chemical which will resume their motion so that we can do on-off motion control. And also by patterning the surfaces where we attach the bacteria, we can effectively increase the speed and the efficiency of these devices. So we are in that level of basically showing the attachment and propulsion and basic on-off control, but we cannot really completely steer them in three-dimensional medium, and also we need to make more onboard chemical release system by new fabrication methods so that we can do more onboard control. Right now we do offboard control for the chemical on-off switching.
Mm-hmm. I imagine it's going to be a whole other challenge to design the actual robotic part of these robots and what you're going to put in the part that's propelled by the bacteria.
That's right. So we are basically trying to now build device basically that can have both chemical control capability and also sensing capability, because you need to sense where you want to go towards in the sense of drug delivery. And also we need to communicate with these devices, so we need to basically make some optical or wireless communication method to have some steering capability for these devices.
Excellent. Well, sounds like you have a lot of work ahead of you. What do you hope to see in your lab, say, in the next 2 or 3 years, or maybe a little beyond? Where do you expect to be?
In next 2 to 3 years, basic goal is to get this device details finished and showing a real device which can be propelled by onboard control, and also hopefully we will communicate with this device and be able to steer by a teleportation control. Because the goal is to have a doctor steering these devices inside your body rather than they are moving automatically, so that we have more human control when we do these operations.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So just as a last question, maybe, is there anything else in your lab that is very exciting and new that you want to let us know, something that you're coming up with in the next year or two?
In the sense of biological inspiration, we have been conducting a new research on insect-like robots that can walk on water, and also lizard-like robots that can run on water, which are all new and unique robots, because when you're small, our insect robots use surface tension to stay on the water surface and also propel very efficiently using basically surface tension-based drag forces. And these insect robots can really go fast and be very efficient. So we are studying these insects, and we built already many prototypes that work very nicely. And we are now trying to also think about applications of these robots on water surfaces, so that they can do maybe inspection of the water quality and also cleaning applications in the very future.
Excellent. Well, all that sounds very interesting. We look forward to hearing a lot about it in the future, and possibly having even another podcast in a year or two to see where you're at with all of these very interesting robots. So thank you very much for your insight and the work, and we'll see you sometime soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
To grasp the view of the medical corps on Professor City's swimming micro-robot, we talk with specialist Dr. Mark Shatner at the MSKCC in New York City, who is specialized in gastroenterology. He presents his grounded view of the in-body applications for robots and makes us realize that in the end, robots are a technology like any other. Hi, Mark. Welcome to Robots.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much.
You're a gastroenterologist and endoscopist at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and we want your medical expert view on a robot that Professor Mettin-City is developing. First of all, maybe can you present yourself to our listeners to give us some background as to where you work, your medical specialties?
Sure. I'm a gastroenterologist, which means I am a medical doctor that specializes in diseases and treatment involving the gastrointestinal tract, so anywhere from your mouth all the way through the rectum, also some associated organs like the liver and the pancreas. One of the common tools that we use is various types of scopes, either colonoscopes, which are inserted through the rectum to examine the inside of the colon, or endoscopes, which are inserted through the mouth and can be used to see certainly the esophagus, the stomach, and now several parts of the small intestine. And we do this for a variety of reasons, either to try to diagnose conditions involving the gastrointestinal tract or to invoke treatment. For example, the classic one is if somebody's having bleeding from the gastrointestinal tract, we can often go in and using tools that are put through the scopes, we can then stop the bleeding.
So within your area of work, could you see a use for these micro-robots, swimming robots within the human body?
I mean, certainly if I use my imagination, it would all depend on the ability of what the robots were able to do. If there was a robot that could safely travel through the gastrointestinal tract and gather data on chemical composition of the intestinal lumen, or be able to pick up and see if any malignant cells were anywhere in the digestive tract and then localize them, that would be very, very appealing and have a lot of use. But it'll all depend on what the robots are capable of doing.
What are the limitations of your current tools?
The current tools, the major problem is they're very invasive. Although we can do these procedures safely, they do require the patients to be sedated or go under general anesthesia in some cases, and that is associated with some risk. Some of these procedures require uncomfortable cleansing prescriptions to clean out the intestinal contents to allow us to see without intestinal contents in the way and obscuring our view. And some areas of the intestine are very, very difficult to reach because they're a long way from either your bottom or from your mouth. And to position a scope in those areas is very, very difficult.
Could you imagine an application for drug delivery? Here we were more talking about sensing or imaging.
Yeah, certainly. There are several conditions, the most common one being either inflammatory bowel disease, such as Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, that is primarily a disease that involves the lining of the intestinal tract. And if you are able to effectively deliver a medication at a high dose just to the area that you're interested in without exposing the rest of the body to systemic side effects, it would be very appealing.
Could you imagine yourself becoming a specialist in in-body robot control?
You know, I think that's a long way off. We've been a specialist in endoscopic control. That's essentially what we do day in and day out. And we're always interested to adapt to new technology. And I guess the closest thing that has come to this, which isn't really a robot, is the capsule endoscope, which has been around now for about 6 or 7 years. And several gastroenterologists have taken that on and developed that into their own specialty. But that's not controlled. It's simply interpreting data that a free-flowing sensor sends back.
So basically it's a capsule that you swallow?
It is a capsule that you swallow, and then you no longer have control over it. What you're able to do is interpret the data that it sends back, which is, at this point, primarily photographic images.
Do you see any ethical questions or worries that patients might have about having a robot in their body, even if it's for a short time?
I think those are certainly, I wouldn't say ethical issues as much as safety issues. Like any other emerging technology in medicine, it will have to be proven safe, you know, have to be proven to be safe. And we have set procedures to do that involving first in vivo testing, then in vitro testing in an animal model, and then eventually testing in humans. So it will have to pass through all of the same safety parameters as any other new technology to be used in medicine.
And the fact that it's propelled by a bacteria, do you think this could bring additional worries in the patients?
And again, the idea of using another organism such as a bacteria or a virus in a therapeutic capacity is not new. People have been trying to use virus, for example, to do drug delivery in gene therapy now for many years, and there are certainly safety concerns, but like I said, there are set ways to establish safety for any medical technology, and this will have to obviously include, this will have to proceed through those safety guidelines.
So basically the main barriers here are really the normal barriers for any normal or new technology in medicine, and not so much the fact that it's a robot or a living organism.
Right. I think these are the same, you know, barriers. I think right now the greatest barrier is the technological one in terms of developing sensors that are appropriate and needed in medicine and that work effectively, that not only tell you what's in there, but where it is and how much of something is present.
And in general, can you imagine any other robot which could be useful in your profession? And would you welcome these robots?
Certainly. Anything that makes our job safer and easier for the patient will be welcomed. That's, I think, everybody's goal is to get a patient diagnosed and treated effectively with minimal impact on their life or their longevity.
Thanks, Mark, for being here with us on Robots.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of Robots. For more information on today's guests, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Inject yourself with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.